This is Delicious Matt Bear, and you're listening to Footstuff.
There's got to be a dog out there named Donnelly.
But
Tyler wouldn't like it.
No, I'd eat that dog.
Because he's a communist.
Well, hey, gang, welcome to Footstuff Podcast. This is episode 94 of the Outdoor Recreation Comedy. We are ostensibly live and recording in Studio 7, just outside of New York State's largest wilderness area. Footstuff Podcast brings you stories of adventure, antics, and activism from around the country. My name is Tyler, Uncle Umbles SoCast.
He's
back.
Oh, no.
It's cold outside.
Oh, no.
And I'm joined tonight by a garbling group of teleprompter operators who have faces for radio and warm words for Japan. To my immediate studio left is Delicious Matt Bear.
It's raw. Where's the lamb sauce?
I've been watching too much Hell's Kitchen lately.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
In Wade's lounge is Wade Bastion himself.
Crotch zip.
Prove it.
I don't know if we're allowed to say that on
there. Crotch
the air.
Zip? Oh, I'll show you.
When Wade walked in, he said, "Look at my crotch zip." Which
yeah,
is
he
such
literally
a pickup line.
He literally flashed the Japan.
Hi, Japan.
Oh, that man from the hospital, the inimitable Jeremy Utz.
I'm the slumpy man.
In your slumpy land.
I'm the slumpy man.
Hey, we have a new guest in Studio 7. He's been mentioned before because he's gone on Bushwhacks with me. It's Ben Brasso.
Also known as Swish.
Swish is in Studio 7 for the first time.
Might be the best nickname, I think.
Oh, and we have a legend back in Studio 7. The one, the only, Ryan Knerp.
Mapleham.
Oh, I don't know. That might be the best nickname.
Bingo.
This week, Footstuff Podcast will bring you hiker news, and then we'll do a deep dive about ham radio. That's amateur radio and how it works. Ryan Knerp's going to literally go not ostensibly live, but actually live later on today in Studio 7. But let's begin with a little bit of Footstuff. And I've got three things, Footstuff Nation. Three things. First, couple weeks ago, I did travel out to colorful Colorado to see friend of the podcast, Evan Mercier. Evan was on episode 23, and he promised us in 3 years' time that he would produce a female climbing documentary with conservation.
There actually a timeline that he
I
gave?
Also don't remember it being a promise. I remember it being a plug. I remember him shamelessly promoting it, but I don't remember a promise.
Okay, well, I'll have to
go
back.
Wasn't given a ring or a bracelet. Nothing commemorative was exchanged.
I went out there to see Evan and his wife Kathy. They got a new dog named Oakley. And we went...
made the dog?
How does that wrap into Evan's life?
Well, we had to go take the dog for a walk, which, of course, if you have a four-legged friend, no matter if it's a cat or a frog or whatever you've
or
got...
Or just a friend that walks on four legs.
Yeah. Half a spider.
We had to take this dog on a walk. We went to Chautauqua State Park, which is just outside of Boulder, Colorado, I know. We talk about New York, and Lord knows I talk about Vermont every day, but we've got to start with Colorado, and this is fun. Let's bring it back home real quick. Chautauqua is an Iroquois word, and it's Iroquois for a bag tied in the middle, which I did not know, but apparently...
what good is a bag tied in the middle? What do you do with that?
How do you even do that?
It's a big bow tie? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But it describes the shape of Chautauqua Lake. It looks like a bag that's tied in the middle. And that was where in the early 1900s, there was this educational assembly. And in that time frame, over the next few decades, there were Chautauquas. They're kind of like primeval TED Talks.
Whoa.
Around the country.
Theodore Speaks.
Exactly. And, and we went to Chautauqua State Park, where there used to be these outdoor gatherings, and now it's where the Flatirons are. It's gorgeous. Matt Bear has free soloed some of the Flatirons there at Chautauqua State Park. And I went there with Evan and Oakley, and as we were walking, numbers, hordes of people would come up to us and say the same thing over and over again. I'm going to steal your dog. Over and over again. It just kept happening. So finally, I started to say to Evan, this kind of sounds like a confession that these people are making.
It's very brazen to announce your crime prior to committing it.
Oh, I see you're charging yourself with second degree larceny. You know,
I'm going to steal your identity.
Exactly.
This is my confession.
What's your social security number? But anyway, after a great hike in Chautauqua State Park, which is beautiful, it's so distinguishable on the horizon as you're approaching the Front Range of the Rockies. I did go to Colorado to visit with my friends at the Leave No Trace Center for Outdoor Ethics. So hi, Andrew Leary and Faith Overall and Mitch and Susanna and Jenna and Julia. Everyone there was so kind, and we're trying to figure out ways to promote better Leave No Trace practices back here in the Adirondacks, which leads me into my second two footstuff stories. But well, Wade, you were pointing at me.
They also do witness protection, right?
No, not anymore.
Is that the other Leave No Trace?
Yeah, that's the first Leave No Trace. Now this is the Leave No Trace Center for Outdoor Ethics. Thank you for that clarification. So I have a tale of two trails now. We're back in New York State. This week I went on two adventures. The first was an adventure to Avalanche Pass, which is in the High Peaks Wilderness Area. I was on the way to Wade's house, but I got a decent alpine start of 1:30 p.m.
Jesus. You started at 1:30?
It's a little late, I acknowledge. But
yeah,
we,
no wonder I didn't see you.
Wade was asleep by then.
To do.
We had our turnaround time, but I have to say this. With the High Peaks Information Center and the Adirondack Mountain Club situated at the busiest trailhead, this gateway to the High Peaks Wilderness, every single person that I saw with Marnell as we skied into Avalanche Pass had either snowshoes or skis on. So everyone was following the rules and regulations. The trail was flat, smooth, perfect, no problems. That brings me to the second journey I took this weekend with one of my favorite families to guide with, the Johnson family from Tennessee. And the Johnsons and I hiked a trail in Keene Valley. We saw a lot of cool things. We saw a corrugated sheet metal outhouse, which I wasn't expecting.
Oh, I have seen that outhouse.
Yeah.
It's nice.
You want a new
outlook.
Did you
tip it over? You know, Tyler Socash style. Tip that some bitch over. Then try to get the internet to write it back.
So, unlike the Adirondack Mountain Club's trailhead, there are no big educational hubs in Keene Valley, New York. There's the Mountaineer, which is awesome, and you should definitely go in there every time you come to Keene Valley.
Literally every time.
Every
you go
time.
To
go in and tell,
you have to go in there.
Tell Charlie, tell Dustin that Footstuff Podcast sent you, and they'll give you good trail information. But anyway, the second thing I saw after the corrugated sheet metal outhouse was a number of people post-holing. And now I think it's time, Wade, for a quick update. Wooly Wade's Woody Wisdom. What the hell is post-holing and why does it matter?
It's when you are a lazy piece of shit and you don't want to wear skis or snowshoes because you think they are too bulky on your feet. Then you sink in because you weigh a lot and you punch through the snow and then you're waist deep halfway up Marcy and you're going, why is this so hard? It's because you're not wearing snowshoes, you dumb piece of shit.
You're proving my point.
This is not an official DEC statement.
No. Okay.
I thought it was making holes in the ground so you could build a fence.
That's what it, when you're bare booting up a trail with snow, like let's say 8 inches or more of snow, you are likely to post your whole leg through the hole and create these icy death traps once that trail freezes over, or just it becomes really uneven and dangerous to walk on or ski down later in the day. So whether you're on Spruce Knob in West Virginia, Campbell Hill in Ohio, or the High Peaks of the Adirondacks, there's one thing that unites us all, and that's our disdain for post-holers. But I acknowledge that admonishing people and yelling at them in the field or doing what we all want to do, shame them online. None of those things truly works at changing behavior. So I was trying to think of a way.
No, we just shame them on the airwaves instead.
Yes.
No.
And also remember, if you're at Campbell Hill in Ohio, there is no sledding at Campbell Hill. The sign forbids it.
I'm trying to think of a way where we could all unite together against the post holers in a way that's fun and helpful for all. And I'm thinking that post holing, which is dumb, it is a dumb name.
Yeah, it's dumb.
It needs a new name. So I was thinking filthy pee holers. Or maybe maybe dirty pee hole. Like they have dirty pee holes. Like, because if they're post holing the trail. But then I started to think when they're gone, sometimes you don't even see who does it. You could call it ghost holes, because it's always the spooky ghosts of the trail that are ghost holing the trail.
I don't know if we can say ghost holes.
But so, some people, to be honest, enjoy the post holes because it creates these obstructions in the ground that you kind of have to ski around and walk around. So they think they're rather glorious. So maybe we could call them glory holes?
Oh.
Maybe.
I like post holes. I fill them with bread. I just
a bread hole?
I carry a lot of bread with me.
To and fill out your them, pack.
Yeah, fill it up with bread.
So the next time you see a dirty pee hole out there, what I want you to do is think.
Or a glory hole.
I want
or,
you to
or
think,
a bread hole.
Or a bread hole. I want you to think. Don't yell at that person and be mean. Let it be known that you just want them to listen to Footstuff Podcast, where they're going to be welcomed into this community where we can make fun of these things together, and you're a part of the family. You're in the know.
That's a good idea. We could fill the post holes with stickers for the podcast. Use it as free advertisement.
I want everyone out there to be a post buster, you know, because there's all these ghost holes out there. You know, negative charge ghost energy can only be solved by radical people with proton packs. So Footstuff Podcast is going to send out proton packs. You're going to be a postbuster. We're going to solve post-holing forever. And we're going to get rid of those dirty pee holes out there. Delicious Matt Bear.
Streams.
Do you have Footstuff?
I do, yes. I went back to the Visitor Interpretive Center at Paul Smith's.
The Vic.
The Vic, yes. I went skiing there with Brittany, and we did the Boreal Life Trail. So we started heading out around the property kind of counterclockwise. So we went out on that, which was really nice. And this was after that big snowstorm that we had. So there was a lot of fresh snow.
And also you were going counterclockwise, so you were going back in time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it was even more snow.
Like Superman.
And
exactly.
We went from the Boreal Life Trail, we did that little loop, and then on to the main trail, so the Jenkins Mountain Trail, the Loggers Loop Trail, which is...
Is it Jenkins or Old Jenkins? Which
it,
Jenkins?
It is regular Jenkins.
Regular Jenkins. Okay.
And we went a little ways out on that, and then we actually took one of the brand new trails that's just been made over there. It was the first time it was open this season, or this first season that it's been open. It was called the Core Connector Trail, and it's slightly above where the Heron Marsh Trail crosses over, and then it's below the Esker Trail, so it's kind of in between the two and cuts across the property. And if you're going counterclockwise, you get some amazing hills. As soon as you get onto that connector trail, it's pretty much downhill flat, like the whole way, all the way to the other side. And then we looped back on the Woods and Waters Trail, which was really, I'd never been on that one either. And that was real nice. Yeah.
I love skiing there.
Yes, that was really fun. Later that night, we went and saw the closing ceremony fireworks at Winter Carnival, which was sweet. Hadn't been over there for a few years to see that, so that was
fun.
Oh,
the Ice Palace rules this year.
Oh, it was really good.
Yeah, it's really
good. I
think
it is still there right now.
They
haven't
demolished
it yet. Oh, yeah, there was about 40 people there last night.
There's about 16 people who are very proud of all that ice that they
carved. I think there's two people that are stuck inside it.
They should leave it up as long as they can. Those ice palaces are awesome.
Yeah. And then the other day, I went out for a little evening ski when it was one of those frigid days when it was, I think, 0 degrees when I left my car. And I went around the Craigwood Golf Course and out on the Jackrabbit Trail a little ways, which was really fun. I had never checked out that part of it before, and then came back and checked out some of the mountain biking trails in that area, the Back Nine, I believe it's called, some of the loops around there, and no one had been on those, so I was kind of breaking through maybe 2 feet of fresh snow, which was awesome. And messed around on that a little while, and then further out on the golf course, and that was really fun. So yeah, just mostly ski stuff lately.
Wade Bastian.
Hello.
You are often deep in the American wilderness.
Well, wilderness.
Deep. So what did you do out there?
Well, let's see. Before I went out, I did some skiing while I was out before I went in this past Sunday. I skied.
Some skiing.
Well, if you'd let me talk for a goddamn second, I'll tell you. I went skiing the day we got all that snow this past Friday, or two Fridays ago, I guess. I went and skied on Lake Road.
I saw you that day.
Yeah, I saw you that day while you were shoveling out your car, leaving work early.
Yep, I was leaving work early. It was great.
Did you go clockwise or counterclockwise on Lake Road?
We went out and back. We just went right to where the flume is, right where the real nice hill is.
So did you go back in time or into the... I'm confused. Which way in time?
This was back in time, but we were going normal.
So you went back to the future but came back from the past.
No, we were back in the past, but going towards the future in regular time.
Oh, all right.
Where was Michael J. Fox? I'm confused.
So that was nice. Then skied for a bit at Henry's Woods, which I'd never actually been to before.
Yeah,
Henry's Woods is fantastic.
It's awesome.
It's so
the skiing
fun.
There
so
is
fun.
So great.
This is in Lake Placid, New York.
It was in Lake Placid,
a town
New York,
so
yes.
Nice it hosted the Winter Olympics two times.
Yes. Yeah, Henry's Woods is fantastic.
Next time you're skiing Henry's Woods, when you go by the part with the maple tubing, just yell, NERP, as loud as you can, and I'll come and say hi.
They will start doing that, and you will get complaints.
Please do it, someone.
Hey, I'll be in that area the next few days.
So the day after I was at at Henry's Woods, I went into the High Peaks Wilderness to work as a caretaker there for 8 days. And that was a great week. A lot of skiing out there, a lot of maintenance on the skiing and snowshoeing trails. And I skied up to uphill and feldspar and back, which is fantastic. It was something that's been on my bucket list for a while. That's about a 2.5 mile trail from the Lake Holden Dam up to Feldspar, the lean-to there. And then, so, skiing all the
way
up.
I mean, I'm sure the way up was fine, but how was coming back?
So I did have to take my skis off for the portion around the huge fucking waterfalls and the gigantic, shitty, rotting ladder. But that was maybe 5 minutes of walking that I had my snowshoes on. I was just carrying my skis. But other than that, it's fantastic.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was a lot. I broke trail most of the way up. And then in between the uphill and feldspar lean-tos, that half mile, I was breaking trail through about knee-deep snow, which was not fun. But yeah, skiing back was amazing.
Were you skiing on those catamounts?
No, I had my Fishers because they have climbing skins. So, yeah.
You got to use the little skins.
Yeah, it was fun. So, yeah, I was doing that throughout the week. Skied through the pass several times. I was probably on the Avalanche Pass ski trail 6 out of the 8 days I was in this week. Spent a lot of time at Marcy Dam on Saturday talking to people, making sure they were prepared. Not necessarily to prevent post holes in the trail, but more making sure they don't break their ankles or legs, because that is a real possibility for when you're walking around without protection on your feet, either snowshoes
those
or skis.
Dirty, filthy pee holers.
I was going through and clearing off privies, clearing the snow off around privies at Marcy
Dam. Did you tip them over?
No, I was in snow up to my waist at Marcy Dam. So there's so much snow out in the backcountry. Like, if you're on those trails and they're nice and packed down and you think nothing bad will happen as long as you stay on the trail so you don't need your snowshoes, you take a couple steps off the trail and you are swimming. Ian, of Sam and Ian from Cascade, fell into a hole while he was out in Avalanche Pass this week up to his neck.
Oh, he's a tall guy.
Wow. With skis on up to his neck. It was a hole just off the trail that trail workers had been quarrying rocks and stone out of. So it was just a weird
fluke
of nature. Yeah, more or less. But yeah, he had to take his skis off while not being able to see them, put his snowshoes on, and then climb out of that hole.
Shouldn't he be working?
It was one of his days off.
I didn't know he had those.
But I got to see them out there, which is very nice. I skied around for a bit through the pass. And yeah, spent a lot of days on skis. Today was day 11 in a row of skiing. I was skiing out to Moose Pond, just outside of Saranac Lake.
How was that?
That was fun. It was a good time.
I've heard that's actually really nice.
It's a real nice, gentle ski. Not too steep.
Ian said trying to find the parking for that is challenging.
It is.
It's hard to find like in the summertime. I know where it's at. It's like you have to drive off of the road a little bit. Like
you
drive through someone's yard, essentially.
Yeah, but in the winter, you can't drive through the person's yard because it's not plowed. So you literally just park on the side of the road have to figure out. You have to just find the small road that leads you down to the bridge and the trailhead. But that was a nice day. And then just before coming here, I was at Stewart's in Lake Placid and saw a guy with a pickup truck with a bunch of stickers on his truck. He had a Footstuff podcast sticker and another sticker that said, "I like big fat dumps." So whoever that is, you're cool.
Same. Same.
Thank you, Wade. Jeremy, you've already made one Admiral Akbar reference tonight. What else do you have in store for us?
Yeah, so I am still not feeling good, so I can't really do a whole lot of foot stuff. Although, I decided to go to a place that I'd never heard of before, and it is called the Silver Lake Bog. Has anyone been?
No, yes. I have heard
of it.
Great
place.
Yeah, it is. It's the trails were made and I think even maintained by the Nature Conservancy. So there's a boardwalk that goes through a bog. Obviously, there's no boardwalk right now. It was covered in snow. And we walked about a half mile of that boardwalk until it ended. It was really cool. We saw tons of animal tracks and pretty sure that I saw bobcat tracks. Pretty sure. I'm not an expert, but Danny and I both thought bobcat. At the end of that trail, there's just an ominous green sign that says trail to the bluffs. So we decided to go, not really having any idea what that was. And it turned out to be really amazing. You hike gently for just a little bit, and then there's a gentle little climb, and you come to this bluff that's overlooking Taylor Pond with views of Whiteface and other surrounding mountains in the area. And it was really cool. As soon as we got up there, we had just gotten the binoculars out, and two hawks were soaring over this frozen pond. It was one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me.
Wow.
That's really neat.
But if you're out there, if you're looking for something like like a quarter day adventure, I also think that it would be really fun to ski that last bit as you're gaining elevation to get up to the bluffs. It reminded me of the trail that goes up to Owl's Head Lookout, the way it's kind of wide and the trees are sparse.
Nice.
You could really get some through the trees skiing, but that's all I got to do, and it was really fun. It was really nice. I've really enjoyed lately short walks because it's all I can do, but going to places that I wouldn't normally go.
And you probably see a quarter of the number of people, too.
We literally didn't see anyone. I did see a really big truck. But there wasn't anyone in it.
Like a fire truck? Those are big.
Not that big. Smaller than that.
Like a dump truck.
Well, that's just shorter. It's still really big. Truck stuff.
So Ben Brasso is here. Swish, what kind of foot stuff have you been doing?
Almost exclusively skiing. I'm pretty into foot stuff, so I've been doing a lot in the last couple weeks,
yeah.
Especially since our big snowfall two Fridays ago. Most recently, was just up on Phelps, ran into Wade on the way, was helping Mary Glynn, our very capable outdoor skills instructor at the Adirondack Mountain Club, guide a trip up that mountain. Lots of filthy pee holers, I can confirm. It might have been nice out Avalanche Passway, unfortunately, quite a lot up on Phelps.
The good thing is, though, I bet you were all wearing snowshoes, which means you were post-bustering the whole way back.
We were busting many posts.
Did Bustin make you feel good?
Every one of them.
It's a line from the song.
Yeah,
it's appropriate.
It's from a song.
I ran ahead of the group. I was there to take photographs mainly. So I ran ahead and had a young man fly down the trail towards me. And it was kind of at a sharp turn. And he flew off the edge, no snowshoes, and just fell in right up to his waist and looked at me with a surprised look and said, "Oh." And I was like, "You all right? You all right?" And he's like, yeah. And his dad came down, no snowshoes either, helped him out, but ran into some gals on the way up who had their snowshoes on, very well done. They just didn't strap them on, so they couldn't get up any higher. So when they hit the steep pitch, they were wondering why they weren't making it. So that was a help.
Phelps
them out.
Mountain, what a great place. Yes. In the winter.
If you walk around those people counterclockwise, they disappear.
It was a menagerie of experiences the whole way. But and just this morning was out heading out to Connery Pond and Whiteface Landing.
Oh, awesome.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Ski. Good, good.
Did you ski across the pond?
I did, because
yes.
You can't.
That's the way you do it.
Jeremy's measuring stick for all people is, did you go across
well,
the
there's
pond?
Well, there's the good route, and then there's the coward's route.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the coward's route's closed partially now, because
oh,
the
really?
Landowner doesn't allow people through there. They have a oh. reroute, but
what
it's
a cowardly landowner.
It's gone the way. But headed
good,
there. And
good snow coverage?
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
Awesome.
Solid enough that there was another post holer.
Who's but walking that? Who
he was
walks?
Running it, actually.
Really?
Yeah, he was in full spandex, head to toe. I'm not even kidding. He even had like the head cowl thing going.
Maybe it was Nick.
I can't get mad at that. Was, that's okay.
It's a solid move, I had to admit. So, plenty of action.
Nice. Thank you, Swish. And last but certainly not least, Ryan Knerp. And Ryan's been here. The Music of the Mountains episode, fantastic. The maple sugaring episode from last winter.
One of the best.
One of the best.
Amazing.
And yeah. Here we are again, the Paragon podcaster himself, Ryan Knerp. Come on back. Tell us what you've been up to.
And in this past week, actually a little bit of all those things. Probably tapped a good 1,000 trees at work.
What?
Yeah. We're trying to get things done. We're going to have about 6,000 taps this year.
Oh, my God.
And
holy
we're
shit.
A little over half of that already. So we're going to keep going. We're going to push through these next couple weeks. And then when temperatures start to rise, the sap's coming in, we're making syrup.
Man.
So getting there.
Free smells.
This is not related to foot stuff necessarily. Have you ever dreamed about bathing in sap?
No, but I've thought about it when I get really close to those tanks to clean something out or work on them. Because if you fall in there, it's going to be cold.
Yeah.
So in addition to that, I've been playing a lot of clarinet and have some good concerts lately. And also on Saturday, had a really nice hike up Whiteface and Esther with Friends of the Pod and year-round Summit stewards Michaela and Chuck. So Saturday
Charles.
Was a perfect blue sky day.
It's pretty cold Saturday.
A
or
little
windy,
bit.
Right?
Yeah. The wind picked up later in the day. At first, it was really nice. So we went up there. We did the big push-up Whiteface at first. And as you can imagine, when it's that clear, you could see all the way out to what we think was the White Mountains in New Hampshire.
Awesome.
You could look down at all the ski slopes with all the little ants skiing up and down the mountains.
That's awesome.
And, just in the alpine area, absolutely beautiful with a mountain just falling away on both sides and clear views in every direction.
It's really an epic mountain to summit when it's snow-capped, like when it's,
was there
when
some
it's
cool,
full-on
cool
winter.
Cool rime ice.
There
up.
Was. There was some amazing rhyme ice. Nice. I'll have to get some pictures up there.
Yeah,
On the Whiteface sign, the one up top that everybody takes pictures of with the elevation on it, there's probably a good 18 inches of rhyme ice. Absolutely amazing sights there.
Not a lot of views from Esther.
No, but actually when the snow is piled up like 4 or 5 feet, the views come out.
Yeah,
there are some nice
some
ones
decent
along
ones,
the way.
Actually, I've done that one in the winter before, and it's not bad.
The ones like I really enjoy looking back at Whiteface from there, I guess.
Yeah,
it's like
that was
the
really
classic
cool.
view, but
oh, totally.
It is nice.
And then on Whiteface, of course, if you've been up the trail from the Atmospheric Sciences Center, it starts climbing really steeply right away.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That makes
yes.
for some of the best butt slides I have ever had.
So
I brought those tiny little sleds that are like just big enough to sit on. Managed to break them both, so that just kind of shows.
Good. Yeah.
And my GPS showed the maximum speed at the end of the hike, which on those slides was 18 miles an hour.
Whoa!
That is awesome.
And it would have been even faster if there weren't a bunch of dirty pee holers coming up.
Oh, goddamn it!
Made for a rough ride too. Probably a few bruises to show for it.
Oh, I think there's a new memoir coming out: Butt Slides and Woodwinds.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, Footstep Podcast is going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to bring you some hiker news from around the country.
I bit into a potato today.
Was it raw?
And it was fucking wrong.
See, when you were doing that, I thought you were doing Paul Hollywood.
Where's the lamb sauce?
No, I bit into a potato today. That
and there was no lamb sauce.
It was so hot that it like burnt the roof of my mouth, but it stuck to the roof of my mouth. So I had to like spit it out, literally spit it out. But and I didn't realize it at first. And I was like, wow, it didn't hurt at all. But the roof of my mouth is really numb. I didn't realize that it was numb because I had like four blisters on the roof of my mouth from like burn blisters.
Potato?
Yeah, from how fucking hot this potato was. And yeah, so then I was like kind of like feeling it, like doing some investigative journalism with my tongue. And
I... Sounds like a good Friday night to me.
Hey. And then I popped all the blisters and then had a mouthful of like weird blister juice.
Once again, good Friday night.
And that's what it's like to work at a hospital.
Hey, gang, welcome back to Footstuff Podcast. Wade Bastion, you are losing control.
Hello.
Do you have news, Wade? Or?
Yeah, you had to ask first. Yes. So this actually happened, well, fairly recently for Footstuff in the past week.
6 years ago.
if anyone has been online recently or is from
the
Colorado area, you probably saw some videos going around of Vail Mountain and the apocalyptic lift lines that were there over the weekend, throughout this past week. Vail had received 38 inches of snow in a 48-hour period, which is among the top five snowfall, like highest snowfall records.
Sounds like a good day for an avalanche.
The like 50-something years that they've operated, which, yes, the avalanche risk was a huge thing they were trying to mitigate. So these lift lines resulted from the mountain being pushed later and all of the locals and all of the tourists coming through and trying to come up and, you know, ski these runs and wait for the lift. People had started lining up for lifts 2 hours before they were supposed to open. And then the lifts opened an hour to an hour and a half late. And when you see some of these videos, there are hundreds of people waiting in line for these gondolas and these chairlifts, and
I don't know
how to describe it. It's something worth looking up. It's hard to describe, just, you know, through audio.
The amount
audio
of
medium.
Milk toe and milk finger that is happening in Vail right now.
But they obviously, it was for safety reasons that they couldn't open on time, and they had to open a little late. And then apparently all the lift lines dissipated fairly quickly because Vail does have a pretty good infrastructure as far as moving people around. But yeah, the it's something worth looking up because I mean, it's not really like an overcrowding issue like sometimes we talk about here in the High Peaks. It really was just a delayed start and a lot of people showing up at just the wrong time. But yeah, it's something wild, something worth watching, because the couple of clips there that are online are truly insane.
I saw those photographs of the Vail Ski Resort, Wade, and someone from my hometown, Old Forge.
You're from Old Forge?
Yeah, it's the...
You really never talk about it. That's crazy.
It's the hold my beer while I kiss your girlfriend, Old Forge, New York. Yeah, that Old Forge.
Isn't there some kind of safari in Old Forge?
There's an enchanted forest where the fun never stops. And bump, bump. And I just wanted to add that
What you do in the parking lot, the bump bump.
They do that. And
yeah,
they go to,
it's a really good place to score drugs.
They go to jail. But someone from my hometown mountain, Macaulay Mountain, posted that photo and said, the lines will never be this long at Macaulay Mountain. And to that I say, yes, they will, through unbridled tourism and through... you know, endlessly promoting your location, you can get crowds. There are tens of millions of people that are within a day's drive of your mountain. And so, yeah, watch out. It's coming everywhere.
What is the mountain called?
Macaulay Mountain.
Macaulay Mountain.
Not Macaulay Culkin.
I was going to say, was it started by the Culkin family?
Macaulay Culkin with a gun.
Yeah.
Wade, thank you for that news from Colorado. Delicious Matt Pear.
Well, we're staying in Colorado for this next news story, and it's kind of going off the back of what Wade was talking about. So Colorado has just opened the first all backcountry ski resort.
Was it called North Star?
It is called
Dawn Star.
Bluebird Backcountry.
Bluebird. I knew it was something.
Yeah.
Like
so
that.
If we go back, Wade, in the time machine,
or just counterclockwise,
or yeah, so we're going back to go forward. But we'll start in the back. Okay. Yeah. So we're going back to Sun Valley, Idaho, which is where the first mechanical ski lift was introduced. And since then, in the U.S., there has never been a ski resort without some form of motorized transportation. And it doesn't have to be a huge gondola, but there's always been some kind
be
of
like a rope, a lift, a T-bar,
a magic carpet,
exactly. Dump truck,
yeah, all those kinds of things. They're all
slightly
there. They're all
smaller
motorized.
Truck.
So yeah, this happened 2 days ago, actually, February 15th. This opened Bluebird Backcountry, which is located about 20 miles north of Kremling, Colorado.
Kremling, Colorado.
I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not. And it's the first completely human-powered ski resort.
So they got like people running in hamster wheels for the lifts.
Exactly,
like,
exactly. Yeah. So there's 300 acres of inbound avalanche-evaluated territory, and then another 1,200 acres of actual backcountry terrain. So it actually requires all users to use backcountry skins to access all of the routes and slopes in the area. Which is awesome for people that do backcountry skiing and also for people that want to get into it. So they're actually teaching lessons on how
that's
to
really interesting.
Skin,
yeah.
How like an intro to backcountry skiing, because a lot of people, it's becoming a lot more popular lately and a lot of people are wanting to get into it. So they're kind of taking the climbing gym approach where people would get into climbing through going to a climbing gym and learning there and then going out and climbing outside and stuff. So they're trying to do the same kind of model where they're taking people out, teaching them how to skin, and then
pelt making down at the lodge.
Yeah, pelt making, all that kind of stuff, raccoon hats. Good stuff.
That's awesome. That's a really good idea.
It's also a thing. I heard about this first from Facebook. It was a while ago, maybe like 2 months ago. And if you look, I think I probably saw it on Ski the East or something like that, one of the Facebook groups, and the endless debates about whether or not this is a good thing are very interesting to read the comments. To hear like both sides of the argument is actually like very entertaining.
Well, the cool thing is they were saying in this article that they were trying to combat how busy and how overpriced a lot of these resorts have become, and the flat fee for day use, $50.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be, $50.
And but what's the going uphill skinning fee?
That $50.
Oh, still 50. Still 50.
$50, flat fee.
Yeah, what's the up and down cost?
Oh, I get it, 50. Flat. That's funny.
And also another 50 for the lesson, and intro. That's all it is. And then they also rent gear and skins and all that kind of stuff there.
Hey, and if you end up going out there to Kremling, Colorado, tell them Footstuff Podcast sent you. They'll be very confused.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more news article, and it comes from the great state of Georgia, the great American state of Georgia, where...
Peach, how about we just call it Georgia?
Well, facing significant opposition, the people of Georgia have spoken, and they've decided to, at least for now, temporarily fight against a massive 12,000-acre titanium and zirconium strip mine that would have been dug right on the outskirts of Okefenokee Wilderness Area, which is in southeastern Georgia.
Honestly, it sounds made up.
It's one of the largest wildernesses in the East.
Where Dr. Seuss makes his thing bopums is Okefenokee.
It's a really important ecosystem, and it's one of the only intact blackwater swamp areas in the entire eastern U.S. that hasn't been dredged and dug up and irrigated.
What about the state of Virginia?
That's all Piedmont horse shit in Virginia.
That's the Great Dismal Swamp.
Oh, yeah. That's there. That's fine. But the rest of that Piedmont country, just Virginia people. Virginia's for lovers, though, which is nice.
That's where Danny's from.
Yeah. Anyway, just wanted to say that we're going to keep our eye on the Okefenokee Swamp in the next coming months. And if there is a petition to sign, we got rid of those train cars.
We got Trail Crew Cabot Cheese.
And we are going to keep a swamp intact.
All right, you heard it here first.
You even got a political looking haircut that you can now fight the good fight.
Yeah, I don't look like an abomination any longer.
No.
Well, at least the people of Japan can...
Hi, Japan.
Yeah, they can see that that's not the case.
There was,
this is going
I
on
think,
way
a,
too long.
A guy missing on the Appalachian Trail. Who
yeah, that happens all the time. There's always a guy missing or...
Someone yelling.
There's always an old person who may or may not finish. If they finish, they'll set a record. If they don't, they'll be dead. There's always these things happening.
Well, Footstuff Podcast is going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to bring you some ham radio from Studio 7.
What did you say? Oral detective work?
Well, I did not say that.
Well, hey, gang. Welcome back to Footstuff Podcast. Ham radio is a popular term for amateur radio. It was first used in 1909 by Robert A. Morton, who reported overhearing...
Invented the ham sandwich.
Well, Robert did do that, and in addition to creating a glossy sandwich, he did admit to saying this. Do you know that fellow who is putting up a new station out your way? I think he is a ham. So the usage of ham as a pejorative slam... kept gaining traction. Other terms were plug and lid to describe landline telegraphers who lacked ability to transmit
appropriately. The old ham slam.
They couldn't get in on that jam.
The old ham lid.
So back in the old
time, that's what I call my toilet seat cover.
It's the ham lid.
Back in the day, these unskilled communication operators were either thought to be drinking copious amounts of alcohol while working, were irresponsible teenage boys, or merely had very little ability and mental acuity.
All of the above, maybe.
It all still happen.
So their miscommunication has actually been charged with causing severe train wrecks across America. So it's important to actually be, if you're going to be a ham radio operator, you have
don't
to,
be a ham.
You have to at least be decent.
So back in those days, there was no talking on the radio. That's Morse code only.
That's right.
Ooh.
Thank you, Ryan. So railroad executives started to get actual pissed about these lids and
yeah,
hams.
You got to get angry when people die.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just like watch it
I mean, if it was a minor train wreck, I wouldn't care. But he said it was
hey,
major.
They pull rocks from the ground for us to use. Come on, respect those people.
So these
working in caves with making canaries die.
These railroad tycoons started accusing one another of hiring unskilled operators to save money and that they charged them for accepting bribes. And they kept saying that they were hiring unqualified students, that their competitors were doing this. These telegraph schools were soon referred to as ham factories, which is where I think Wade went to college.
Wait, isn't that also the nickname you have for your toilet?
The ham.
So he calls his bathroom
at this
at
point
Tom's
in,
house.
In time, you
give
might,
me a second. Going to the ham factory.
You might be wondering why are we talking about this on
I was
podcast.
Actually, I really was.
So, ham radio has been used in outdoor recreation for over a century now, and most recently, we only have to look back to January as seeing it actually being a productive use of communication across the world. In January, there were all of the bushfires. Some of them might still be happening across Australia, and one of the bushfires in New South Wales knocked out a cell phone tower, so the ordinary lines of modern communication were totally wiped out by all of the fires, and so volunteers across New South Wales put up radio repeaters in the mountaintops, and volunteers and rescuers were able to communicate with one another last month from all across the East Coast by using ham radio. And I think that's fantastic. And if you still need to be convinced that ham radio is important, lest we forget that Nick Van Owen sent out an important emergency call from Isla Sorna to the headquarters of InGen.
The British are coming.
No.
One if by land, two if by sea?
No, this happened just after, in the direct aftermath of Nick going through the long grass.
Never go through the long grass.
And this happened in, of course, The Lost World, when Vince Vaughn did actually show America how to operate a ham radio correctly, I believe.
Don't forget about the movie Frequency, too, where you can talk back in time.
I think we talked about that in the first segment of the show.
But we are so lucky to have Ryan Knerp to explain exactly what it takes to be an enthusiast on the radio, ham radio. Just for fun. It's a hobby, right?
Oh, of course, yeah. Don't call me a lid, because I am a good operator right here. We still use that word. Oh, yeah. But to be a ham radio operator, you actually do need to get a license from the FCC, Federal Communications Commission. So there's three different classes. You can start off really basic or study a lot harder, learn a lot more electronics, and upgrade those to get more privileges, basically more things that you can do. So that test, on it, you have to learn a little bit of the rules and regulations involved in ham radio, basically how you talk on the air, how you operate, where you can talk, where you can use data, Morse code, other modes, and then also a lot of the electronics and radio theory that goes behind it, so you can understand not only how to operate, but also why it works and things that you can do and troubleshoot.
When did you actually start getting into ham radio, Ryan?
I was so little, I can't even remember. The reason I got into ham radio is because my dad was a ham radio operator, too. And he's been licensed since he was about 16. So I grew up, I remember being, really tiny, probably before I even knew how to talk. I remember listening and, like, sitting on my dad's lap while he is on the radio talking to other people and operating contests. And it's just always been a part of my life. So when I got a little older, I got my first license when I was 13. I think I was in about eighth grade at the time. And so that was a while ago now. I'm going to sound, you're going to know how old I am. But back at that point, in addition to passing a written test, you also had to pass a Morse code test.
And that's not a part of it anymore, right?
Not anymore. Yeah, nope, that was phased out a couple of years after I got my license.
Yeah.
But back at that point, you had to be able to copy 5 words per minute Morse code. So I passed my 5 words per minute element, and then also my novice...
Mavis Beacon!
Old-fashioned style.
Yeah, no kidding.
When you hear Morse code, like in the movies and things like that, how fast are they going? Do you have any idea of that? How good is your Morse code knowledge?
Not too bad. Yeah, I can copy Morse code. I can listen and send it.
Yeah.
It depends. Sometimes it's just nonsense, just random letters. Just beep, beep, if beep, even beep, that. Beep. I've totally heard like intros to songs where they're just sending hello over and over again. So you never know. It might be real. Might not be.
There's a, what is it? I think it's a Coldplay song where the drum beat is the Morse code for tits.
I'll have to hear that one. But then there's also, I think it's the Rush song, YYZ, which is in the drums, the letters YYZ over and over again during the entire song.
That is amazing.
Neil Peart, rest in peace.
Hell yeah.
So Ryan, maybe you can help set the scene here. I mean, people are on their cell phones 24/7 now, and that's the primary form of communication. Heck, we are starting to see languages across the world get siphoned into fewer and fewer, more widespread singular languages. So when do you use radio to communicate, and how have you been using it in the mountains?
Well, the good part about ham radio is there are 1,000 different aspects to it. You can sit in your basement at home with a $10,000 radio and a tower in your backyard and talk to people all over the world with absolutely no effort if you really want to.
Wait, so, where have you been communicating with people? Like, which countries have you spoken with?
Oh, that I've spoken with? Probably, I don't know, 50 or 60 countries or so.
Whoa!
Which sounds like a lot, but then there's people out there, like my dad, who has, I think, well over 250 countries confirmed. Wow. Wow. So yeah.
Do you keep a log? Or something
I do,
like that?
Actually. I wish I brought it tonight. But every time you make a contact, you do log it with the other person, their call sign. So my call sign is KC2EDH, and that was issued to me when I passed my first ham radio test. And from that call sign, that's unique to every operator, and you can tell exactly where the person is from by that call sign. So every American call begins with K, W, A, or N. So just by hearing that, you'll know that you're in the U.S., and then having the 2 in there, the region 2, is New York, New Jersey. Region 1 is New England, and throughout the country, you can tell where that region is. Cool. So in other countries, yeah, like F is France, D is Germany, Spain is EA. So you can tell by that prefix exactly where somebody is from.
Have you ever filled out, I saw on in some of my research, a QSL card?
I sure have, yes. And I actually have my own. I wish I brought one tonight. I will have to send you guys an image of it.
What is a QSL card for anyone who doesn't know?
So after you talk to somebody on the radio, one tradition that the ham radio operators have is you basically send each other a postcard. And on it, you can have your picture, a picture of your equipment, or basically anything like that. My picture is this epic shot of me standing on the side of Wright Peak with my shadow going down the mountain and all the other high peaks off in the distance. And you can tell from it's the shadow of me and my backpack standing in the alpine zone, because that's what I'm all about.
Hell yeah.
Heck yeah.
So yes, I send those out to people all over the world after I talk to them, and they send me back cards sometimes too. So
what kinds of conversations do you have with these people, and how long do they typically last when you make contact?
Well, pretty much absolutely anything. If you're going to talk about the shortest conversations, they are contest style. So those are basically, you basically exchange each other's call sign, a signal report, and that's it. You're done, and they're on to the next one. So when there's somebody in a country that's hard to reach, or just basically a rare station like that, it's mostly contest style. Really quick, 5 seconds, and you're done.
Liechtenstein, Djibouti.
Exactly. Yeah, that's about it.
What'd you say about my booty?
So it could be like that. Otherwise, you can get on the air and then just put out a call that you're looking for any station. Ham radio operators do use a lot of codes. So if you're just looking for someone to talk to, you say CQ. So what I would say is CQ, CQ. This is KC2EDH. And from that, then once I get off the microphone, I can listen for other stations coming back. And if I'm just dialing around, I'd listen for other people to do that. So in some of the times when I'm on a mountaintop with my battery-operated ham radio, that's the way I like to operate most of the time, kind of out in the field, I'd put out that call. And you never know who's going to come back. I've talked to people as far away as Poughkeepsie, New York, out to Africa, Rwanda, Slovenia. I've talked to somebody in Slovenia from an island on Rainbow Lake.
That's
amazing.
You just never know who's going to come back to you. And of course, you talk about anything. Run into a lot of people who are into hiking in the outdoors. There's actually a club called Summits on the Air, another one called Parks on the Air, where every park, state park, national park, and just about every named mountain has a number. And depending on how hard it's to get to, they have different points. And by making contacts from those places, you can get points.
I bet you've got a lot of points.
What?
So yeah, Summits on the Air is a lot of fun, and that is right up my alley. So I'd bring this little radio, battery operated, can talk all over the world. So I'll bring that up to mountains.
How many points do you have?
That's a good question. I have no idea. I'll go in there and add it up. Probably not that many. I'm pretty bad about putting everything online after I'm done.
It's like Pokemon Go, but for radio.
But awesome. For the whole world. Yeah. So the way I like to explain ham radio to people who have never done it before is think about the FM radio in your car. So that dial goes from about 87 all the way up to 107.
Yeah,
so
105 the drive.
Yeah. So
Q102.
Hot 93.Q.
B101, I think, is
all the good old-fashioned. Yeah.
So
classics.
All those good stations are in what we call the FM radio spectrum. Now take that dial and imagine that you can keep dialing down lower than 87 where FM goes. Ham radio operators can talk in different portions of the radio spectrum called bands. So if you kept that dial going down, ham radio operators can talk from 50 to 54 megahertz. Then keep dialing down even lower. You can talk from 28 to 29.7, from 18 to 18.1, from 14 to 14.3. And there's probably about, I think 12 ham radio bands that are down low. We call that the shortwave spectrum. Then if you went up higher from that FM radio, if you went above 107 where it ends, to 144 to 148. That's another ham radio band. There's another one up higher from 222 to 225, and they keep going way, way, way up.
Like Creed.
Yeah, there's a lot more in there. So they kind of change the characteristics as you go higher and lower, too. Those higher ones are good for short-range communications, like that 144 to 148 that's really popular for people in their cars. The antennas are pretty short. You can mount one in the car, no trouble at all. So pretty good for that. But then as you go lower...
Is that kind of like a CB radio, then?
Kind of. CB is actually a bit lower. CB goes from... around 27 megahertz.
Oh, okay.
So it's, yeah, good for short range too, but then you never know. Sometimes you might get people hundreds of miles away. But down in those lower frequencies, those are the ones that you use to talk worldwide. And the trade-off, though, is you need a much longer antenna. Like when I'm hiking up to the top of a mountain and I want to talk to somebody in Africa, I'll find a rock or a stick, tie the end of my rope to it, and try to throw it over a high branch in a tree so I can pull my wire up as high as I can.
Wow. Do you ever get any funny looks while that's happening?
Oh, I do it well away from trails where nobody is going to see what I'm up to.
My wire is extended. You up? So, Ryan Knerp, apparently you've brought a ton of ham radio equipment to Studio 7.
I've brought a whole bunch of stuff. And the good thing about all of these is they are tiny little portable radios that you can bring absolutely anywhere. So just looking at the size of them, of course, they're all pretty small. And of these ones right here, I built them myself. So that means that they are cheap.
Whoa.
And I really don't care if I get rained on and snowed on because I can always just build another. So of course, being tiny and inexpensive, they have a lot of limitations. So these four right here, they're all Morse code only. So I can't actually talk through them. Back in the early days of ham radio, that's all it was, Morse code. So I use this little Morse code key right here.
And it does look like an old-timey Morse code key.
World War II surplus. After the war, there were millions and millions of these sold for like 25 cents a piece, like at every radio shop. So there's tons of them out there, and lots of people still use them. My dad gave this one to me, just like most of my ham radio equipment.
You can picture the Lusitania sinking as you look at this Morse code device.
Yeah, so I wire it up to some of these little transceivers right here. We call it a transceiver because you can both listen and transmit with it. So let's go from the most basic. This little thing right here is called the Pixie Kit, which it puts out next to no power. You can run it off a 9-volt battery. And like with modern radios, they have a dial, so you can kind of tune around, listen on different frequencies. Nope, not with this one. You plug in a little tiny crystal, one of these little metal things, and it's one channel only, so that's it.
Whoa!
So
wait,
wherever
what?
You are.
It's yep. Crystal power?
Yeah. Important.
Crystal power.
This is a PSA, public service announcement. Everyone remember to charge your crystals.
You got to leave them in the sunlight,
there
right?
There was just a super moon.
The moonlight.
Goddamn super
moonlight. Just happened, Wade.
Goddamn super
moon. Wait a minute. I'm interested in these crystals. So the crystal tunes it to a specific channel or a specific frequency?
Specific
rather.
Frequency, yeah. Okay. So just like on your FM spectrum, you're between 87 and 107. This little crystal I just plugged in is for 7.122. which is a popular Morse code frequency. This is called the Pixie. You can get the kits online, shipped directly to your door for about $2.
Whoa.
So you put it together yourself. It puts together, puts out next to no power. So if you talk to anyone on it, you're really lucky. I haven't. But I took one, another Pixie, and I put it into this little Altoids tin. And it's all in there, battery and everything.
That's awesome. That looks way cooler than the other one.
So they all have names. I call this guy the Alpine Blaster 5000.
That was my nickname in high school.
So stepping up a little bit, this one actually a little better, the Micro Mountaineer, in a heavy-duty metal case, so you can take it anywhere. And yeah, absolutely no controls on there. You plug in your headphones, your Morse code key, some batteries, an antenna, and that's it. The frequency that it sits on is all you can get.
Wow.
So it puts out a little more power, sounds a little better.
Take that, Alexander Graham Bell.
I just love the idea of a, like, an old-timey crystal-powered chat room.
That's pretty much all it is, yeah. Yeah.
It sounds so like cool. An Indiana Jones movie.
The Kingdom of the Crystal-Powered Chat Room. Yes.
So, yeah, built all these from kits. I call this one the St. Regis Special because I lived on St. Regis Mountain.
That was my nickname in high school.
And this one came as a kit, too, called the Rock Hunter.
The Rock Hunter.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, oh, Dwayne Johnson's got nothing on you.
This one's a lot fancier. This has the crystals built in and a little switch, so you don't have to pull them out of the sockets. You can just switch them around.
You just go to different crystals?
Yeah, yeah.
Damn, that's cool.
My goodness.
So Morse code only.
Okay, so now you're going to the big device, which I'm sure is the portable one. It's, but I say big, it's kind of the size of a, I don't know, like a TI-83 calculator.
No, like a stack of
hands. A little bigger than
that. We need appliance.
I would say one of those hot plate sandwich makers.
Yes, yeah, a press.
Yeah. Around there, yeah. Probably weighs about the same as that. I don't know, kind of book sized, but weighs a lot more.
Like half a toaster.
Yeah. Half a toaster, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So if you think about your average light bulb, you have like, what does an LED bulb use? Like 8 watts or 10 watts or something?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, this puts out 5 watts of radio power. And from that, with an antenna up in a tree, I've talked, all around the world with it. So it is, of course, commercially made, much, much better quality. You can tune around.
Oh, don't talk down on yourself like that. I'm sure your pieces are great. Come on.
So you can tune around. You can use voice in many different modes. You can actually talk on AM, FM, and single sideband. And Morse code, the technical term for that is CW. But ham radio also has tons of digital modes. You can actually hook it up to a computer, or everything you can do on a computer, you can do on a smartphone now, too. So you can actually type and send text and data to each other over radio as well.
Whoa! Whoa.
And the
That's
good part about
cool.
that is
That's
like you
wild.
Have to have a good signal to actually hear somebody's voice or to actually hear the Morse code. But the computer or smartphone can really pick those signals out of the static. So that data can cut through with low power,
Man.
Bad conditions. And you can also do ham radio TV. You can do slow scan TV
what?
And fast scan TV, or also called amateur TV, and send images over the radio too.
So Ryan, it's portable for a reason, because you can take this up mountains, through the valleys, but how do you get the signal? I see the main device, but what are you doing to actually get into that frequency?
So from the radio itself, you can see a cable coming out. And it goes
It's
to,
traversing Studio 7 oh into the fine dining room. It's the room we never use.
So it goes over to the window where you'll see a little plastic box that's called a matchbox. It has a little wire coil in there. That matches my radio to the antenna, to the wire that comes after it. And there's just a wire hanging out the window. And that is tuned for the 14 megahertz band, which during the day is really good for worldwide communications. At night, it's a little tougher. But let's turn up the volume, tune around a little bit, see if we can hear any activity, and I will find an open area where there's nothing going on and put out some calls to see if there's any ham radio operators around who want to be on a podcast.
And Ryan, can we get your microphone as close as possible to this thing so we can hear it?
Of course, yeah. I will turn up the volume and see what we can hear. Okay, so we're on an open frequency in the 20-meter band, have our antenna out the window. It's picking up a lot of noise, probably from power supplies and all the electronics we have running here.
There is a lot of that in Studio 7.
So let's see what happens. Let's put out that call and see if anybody comes back. I'll do the polite thing first. Is this frequency in use? Is this frequency in use? CQ, CQ, CQ. This is KC2EDH, Kilo Charlie 2 Echo Delta Hotel, calling CQ and standing by.
Come on, you cowards out there. Respond.
Who's going to be on Footstuff?
CQ, CQ, CQ. This is Kilo Charlie 2 Echo Delta Hotel. KC2EDH calling CQ and standing by.
It's got to be around Hiker Midnight in Djibouti right now.
DJ Djibouti calling in.
CQ, CQ, CQ. This is KC2EDH, Kilo Charlie 2, Echo Delta Hotel, calling CQ and listening. So right now, I do have to give a disclaimer. We are in Keene Valley, which has really tall mountains all around us, and rocks, which mountains are made out of, do absorb radio signals. So this might be a tough place for radio. That's why on mountaintops, you can talk really, really far.
There's no rocks up there.
Yeah, because you're on top of them. With this little handheld, I've been carrying this thing around with me since I was about 15 years old. My parents gave this to me for my birthday one year. And you can talk on FM on a lot of VHF frequencies, like the 144 to 148. That band is pretty popular for short range. And there's one frequency on there called the National Calling Frequency, 146.52. So a lot of times when I'm on Mount Marcy, Algonquin, something like that, and there's nobody around, or I've talked to everybody on the summit and there's not much going on, I'll pull this out and just listen it, and just listen. And sure enough, one time when I pulled it up on Mount Marcy, I heard somebody say the words fire tower. So I came right back and said, oh, hi, this is KC2EDH. And sure enough, he was another ham radio operator on the BB Hill Fire Tower down in Columbia County.
Whoa.
I have yet to make it. But that was 126 miles away.
Wow.
Which for a handheld radio like this, that is probably twice as far than I've ever talked with it before.
Wow. That's
so the guy
neat.
I was talking to, he was from Schenectady. Yeah, ham radio operator into hiking, fire towers and everything. And since that day, I've talked to him two more times from different fire towers.
Oh, just like awesome. On accident?
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
One day I was in the car just scanning through on my radio on 14652. I heard him calling from that same BB Hill Fire Tower. So I talked to him. I was down in Kingston that day. And another time, yeah, I was driving. I was actually going through Cascade Pass, and he was up on St. Regis Mountain.
So yeah, that's awesome.
And of course, as you tune through some of the bands at night, you'll hear the same voices from day to day. You'll run into the same people out there.
Thank you, Ryan. That's awesome.
That's really so awesome. So cool. Wow.
But yeah, people talk about absolutely anything. Of course, being into hiking, talk about hiking with people a lot. One time I put out a call on not the 14 megahertz band like we have here, but 21 megahertz. And somebody came back from Alberta, Canada. And sure enough, he lived on an alpine lake. So we were talking about alpine plants for a while.
So, that's so cool.
So you just
that's
never really cool. know. You never know.
Yeah. That's awesome. Man. I need to get me one of these.
Well, it's really not that hard. The entry class license, technician class, I bet any one of you guys, after studying for like 2 weeks, will be able to go in there and pass the test. There's
Hell
really
yes.
not a whole lot to it. I have, my license is the next one above it, general class, which allows me some privileges on every band. I can talk on some of those HF shortwave bands. And then there's still one more above it, extra class. Which allows you even more.
Just a little bit extra.
Yeah. That's what we have, right?
But yeah, the good part about extra is there's a couple little portions of the band reserved for that extra class, and that's where you overlap with a lot of the other countries where they're allowed to also. So you have the best chance of getting some of those distant or DX stations in the extra class portions. So that's kind of the incentive to study up and upgrade your license.
Until then, we'll just remain extra medium class. Ryan, thanks for showing us all of the equipment. Are there local clubs that are uber into this?
There sure is. There's a really active ham club in Saranac Lake, and they do all the backcountry communications for some of our big events in the area, for the Ironman. There
oh,
are
cool.
so many places where cell phones don't work on that course. So in those places, ham radio operators are stationed, so they can
That's
pass
really
along traffic
cool.
if there's an emergency.
They also, the 90-miler.
You got it.
Is
yep, same
correct?
With the
90-miler. Yep.
There's a lot of places on the 90-miler where people out in, I think they're called, like, not the pacer boats, but like counters, just making sure that everybody passes by and nobody's dropped out of the race. They're all ham radio operators, too, because cell phones don't work out there.
And someone did get lost in the cold river this year when they went down the racket, so it's important that those rescue squads are out there.
Exactly. It was probably a ham radio operator who discovered that and passed the information along.
Very cool.
Very cool.
But just tuning around on the shortwave radio outside the ham radio spectrum, you'll hear all kinds of stuff. Since shortwave radio is worldwide, there are a lot of broadcasters. So you'll hear, some of the biggest stations actually are Radio China International, Radio Havana, Cuba. I listen to them quite often, actually. They have a super strong signal. Let me see if I can get them right now.
Where they guess and they were legally allowed to be there. So they return
attention to the scene in the film version of the national laws that protect
So it sounds like probably a news report right now. A little staticky, kind of hard to understand. Let's see if we can catch their intro here.
You mention all the time we have.
All the day, but that's okay. You can come back and check us out tomorrow.
We're here 7 days with
Audio. We're going over there in Cuba, and we hope you'll be there.
Cuba, yeah. They said it.
Yeah, a little tough to hear.
So that's being broadcast from Cuba.
Sure is, yeah.
All the way to
Studios.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
And it's picked up on this like small little
on a wire that I just threw out Studio 7 window.
Wow.
That's honestly awesome. That's really so cool.
We're huge in Japan and now huge in Havana. I love it.
So, as you're saying, you can listen to stations all around the world. Have you ever spoken with anyone famous? That was a ham radio operator? Because there's apparently been many famous people who've also been ham radio operators.
Not that
Did you
I know
look up
of.
Anyone who is on that list?
Oh, you want to hear some names?
Can
well,
I guess
see.
People?
Fucking names.
Let me guess. Let me,
John Hamm.
James Polk.
John Hamm was the first ham radio operator. You're right.
The ones that I can think of. Off the top of my head, I can think of Joe Walsh from the Eagles.
Joe Walsh from the Eagles, yes.
Uh-huh. He loves those vintage boat anchor radios.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then another one, he died a couple years ago, but King Hussein of Jordan.
Yes.
Yes, yep, he was King a ham radio. His call sign was JY1.
Wow. we've also got, I mean, again, most astronauts, they're all on here.
I spoke with an astronaut once. Not on radio, though.
Buzz Aldrin?
It wasn't as cool as on the radio.
He punched a man.
In real life. It was Neil Armstrong.
May not be a surprise, but Art Bell.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, Coast to Coast AM is so funny.
Do you listen to... Man, I
love
listen
Coast
to Coast all the time.
Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
It's not quite like that. It's better. It is better.
We'll say a few substances might help you understand it and get into it a little better.
I mean, George Norrie, too, is like the best voice in radio.
But yeah, Art Bell, he was an interesting person, yeah.
Yeah.
Marlon Brando?
I did not know that.
Who else is
I kind of want to look into doing this. This is really cool.
It's really cool.
Herbert Hoover Jr.?
I did not know that either.
H.H.J.?
Guess who his dad was. Yeah, I don't know. There's a bunch of famous people.
Herbert Hoover the first?
Oh, Priscilla Presley.
Oh, I didn't know that either. That's a good one.
So yeah, I don't know. Fun names.
Yeah, that's really cool. Ryan, thank you for coming into Studio 7. Is there anywhere that people can reach out to get more information about becoming a ham radio operator themselves? Or can they reach out to you?
Sure, yeah. Don't be afraid to reach out to me. My Instagram name is HikesWithFilm. No spaces in there, all one word. Or the American Radio Relay League, ARRL.org. They have a really good intro to ham radio webpage, and lots of ham radio news and resources on there. Great website to get an introduction.
I know you were talking earlier about purchasing like certain kits and some of the stuff you've got on the table here. If you were going to, like, let's say, buy a new radio, where would you recommend like doing your shopping?
Sure. So yeah, there's a couple different avenues you can go. If you've used a soldering iron or know a little bit about electronics, you can always build kits. There's a couple really good, inexpensive kits out there in kind of the $50 or $100 range. In fact, there's a ham radio operator in India, Ashar Farhan, V-U-2-S-E. He started a company called HF SIGS, and his radio is called the BITX, B-I-T-X. And that is a kit. You can build a fully functional ham radio complete with touchscreen and software control for like $120.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a really good way to start getting into the hobby. You can buy it from him, from his website, or you can just go on Amazon and get a really cheap handheld VHF UHF radio by the company Baofeng. They're like $20 or so, which of course you do need a license if you want to transmit.
Yes.
But
I was
that
going
is,
to say that. Yeah. Get your goddamn license.
Yes.
Don't get fined.
But that is probably a really cheap way. And by VHF UHF, you'll hear people right in your immediate area.
That's cool.
That is really cool. If so, with the like the cheap $20 one, you could essentially buy it and listen without a license, though.
Yep, that's totally possible. Just make sure you don't transmit.
Hmm.
Well, thank you, Ryan Earp. Footstuff Podcast is going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to give you some plugs from Footstuff Nation.
Yeah, no obscenity over ham radio. That applies to slow scan TV, too.
It'll be art.
But hey, but between your smartphone and a handheld, you could totally beam us slow scan TV pictures from anywhere.
Wow.
That's so cool.
That is really cool.
Oh, man.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Footstuff Podcast. You can subscribe to this high-quality outdoor recreation comedy on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify if you like what you hear and you're thirsty for more. Leave us a review on iTunes, and we got a couple of reviews. Can you believe it?
All right.
Hell yeah.
One of
Let
them,
it rip.
Let it rain. We actually really do appreciate this when people take the time to
we
send
do.
The reviews. So this one is entitled, I Love You More Than Gam Gam.
Prove it.
Dear Footstuff and Internet Trolls, I want you to understand the lengths I've gone to give my second 5-star review, the true 10-star rating. I spent a solid 4 minutes creating a new email account, opened iTunes, and searched for the podcast, then wrote this review. I love how literal this is. This podcast is so special to me now that I've written to you guys more often than I've written to my own grandmother. Gam Gam. Oh, so he continues to say, the point is you guys rock. Thanks for all that you do and congrats on your growth. I look forward to every episode. And thank you, Philbert G. What
Hell
a
yes.
hero's review. That was very nice.
That's honestly one of my favorite. It's not very often that I get to hear a letter read aloud to me that is also addressed to internet trolls, which to me, that's very funny. That is very funny.
This other review came from Update Caused Crash, and we're so sorry about that, but what else can I say other than that this is simply one of the best, nay, the best podcasts out there. The gang is consistently funny, entertaining, and educational. Anytime there's a new podcast released, it is easily the highlight of my day. Keep up the amazing work. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you very much, Update Cause Crash. We really appreciate that as well. I just want to give a couple quick shout-outs to two of my friends, from Brian Easton and Caitlin Jarvis, who listen to Footstuff Podcast all the time from Syracuse, New York. And they came up here and went hiking all over the Adirondacks. And I just want to say hi to Brian and Kate. Thanks
I've
for
met
listening
Brian.
To the show.
He's cool.
Yeah, you were one of the first people to ever meet Brian before his
ever?
Parents. Yeah.
That's honestly awkward.
The other two people I want to just say hi to real quick are Ronnie Judge and John Saganik. Ronnie and John were skiing at Mount Van Hovenberg. They went there because they listened to Footstuff Podcast. They also went to the Cascade Cross Country Ski Center. But at Mount Van Hovenberg, they found a brave amount of trash on the side of the trail. And they both have pouches designated to pick up trash on the trail.
Trash pouch.
And they carried out all of the gross stuff. And Ronnie's carried out some unspeakable things from the backcountry.
Some unmentionables.
Unmentionable things.
No, we mentioned them here like we did last week.
We even gave Ronnie a t-shirt. So Ronnie and John, thank you both.
Yes, thank you.
For carrying out Brave's amount of trash. Also, just a personal shout out and plug. I will be in Montpelier, Vermont on Friday.
Capital Pho?
Well, I'll be in Montpelier at the North Branch Nature Center, which is hosting in conjunction with the Northeast Wilderness Trust, an event, and I'm going to be the speaker. I do this talk called 7,000 Miles to a Wilderness Ethic. I do it all the time.
What
I
is
love
that about?
It.
Yeah, I don't know. I've
lies. 7,000 miles?
It's about
I
lies.
Think it's about rollerblading through some
hot
sort
dogs,
of wilderness area.
Hypothermia.
Yeah.
And I'll be there once again Friday, February 21st, 7 o'clock p.m. It's a free event, North Branch Nature Center. I hope to see someone there.
Will you tell autograph
if,
books?
If someone comes in and says, Footstuff Podcast sent me.
You'll take off your shirt and do your speech shirtless?
You'll take out a clippers and start shaving your head and give that person your beautiful, beautiful hair.
I'll give you a sticker. Delicious Matt Bear.
I have a shout out actually to your brother-in-law, Tyler Riley, who I saw at Old Mountain Coffee.
The Riley?
Yeah,
Riley.
The Riley. He was up here with his friend Matt hiking Giant Mountain.
Matt.
Had a great time. And
that's you.
Yeah, not
Gant
me. The
Mountain?
Other Matt. The only other Matt.
Hi, Riley.
Yeah.
Hey, Riley.
And also
Climbed
shout out
dead
to
Dead Dog Mountain.
Old Dead Dog Mountain. Yep, Dead Dog Giant. And shout out to Corey and Gabby, who are up here. They're friends of the pod.
Yes, they are.
Yep, they stopped into Old Mountain Coffee and said hi, and then went to check out the Vic because they heard about it on Footstuff Podcast and had a great time out there, which is awesome. And my last shout out, and the biggest shout out, is Footstuff Podcast is actually trying to get a little recognition. And we have entered in to the Outdoor Media Summit Awards. So this is an annual award ceremony for the outdoor industry. They do various different awards for podcasts and speakers and films and all that kind of stuff. But we have entered in to win the People's Choice Best Outdoor Podcast of 2019. And so far, we have had an amazing response from everyone. More than six people have said they've entered in and said Footstuff Podcast sent them. It's very easy to do. The link is in our social media accounts. Well, it's on all of our social media accounts, and it'll be in the show notes. Very simple to do. You don't have to enter your email or any personal information.
None of that garbage horse shit.
Nope, but you just have to click Best Outdoor Podcast of 2019. It's the very first option you can click, so make sure you click that one. Say Footstuff Podcast, enter in our website, and then tell them why you love us. And that's it. And we could win an award, and that'd be really cool.
And who but Footstuff Podcast deserves to be the people's choice?
Exactly.
I cannot speak for the other three members of the show, but I am far too good looking to work a real job anymore. I need some recognition. I wish I was born smart instead of handsome, but I wasn't. I need this.
Yeah, so get out there. We'll post the link a few more times and promote it. But yeah, help us out. It'd be rad.
Wade Bastion.
Quick shout out to a couple people that I saw in the woods on... while I was working, specifically Sunday on my day going into the woods when it was negative 20 when I left my house in Jay. That day I
Tom's
saw
house.
Tom's house where
you
I
left Tom's house.
Live. will not be living there for much longer. Saw a friend of the podcast, Paul Gebhard. I think I'm pronouncing that right. He is a friend of the podcast. He was trying to hike, I believe, Gray and Skylight and had to turn around because he was getting kind of sick, which good on you for knowing your limits. But yeah, great guy. Great running into him. And then also, fantastic friends of the podcast, Vin and Dr. Susan Grant.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Susan Grant made an amazing cardboard cutout of our logo that she gave to me, and I now have out at the outpost, which is really nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Vin gave me a hug, which is very nice as well.
Oh, man.
Did you give him a shirt?
No, I did not give him a shirt. But we talked for a while. He stopped by the outpost, and they were hiking with a couple friends through from Upper Works to the lodge, spending the night at the lodge, and then going back the next day.
It is hard for Vin to give hugs because he's wearing so many Footstuff Podcast t-shirts.
He keeps getting them. Yeah. It was awesome seeing them. Yeah, so shout out to them. It was a very nice day. Yeah.
Jeremy Utz.
So I have just a couple quick ones, too. I did this week drop off stacks of stickers at Cascade Ski Center, and I also dropped them off at Forever Wild Apothecary. So if you want some free stickers, go into those places and get them. If you go to Forever Wild Apothecary, Danny will be there. You also get to meet Danny and maybe
tell
get
her Footstuff Podcast.
Yeah.
You.
Tell her that. She'll be very irritated because I tell her that every time I come home. I also wanted to give some random shout outs. I was thinking about it the other day and I was like, man, there's a lot of really cool people that listen to this show. And we don't shout them out unless people, you know, interact with us. So I'm just going to shout out people that don't talk to me. Known liar, Henry Lievers. Shout out.
I see him like once a week.
He doesn't talk to me. Hi, Henry.
Can I shout out
Celia
someone?
From work refuses to speak to me or give me a sticker. Hi, Celia.
Dr. Manoj Vora, who hiked through the floodlands this weekend, and I did not
did?
See.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Also, Cora Johnson. Signed in to the registers one of the weeks when I was hiking out and drew a little Footstuff logo on one of them, which is very
awesome.
Nice.
Shout out to Core for that amazing portrait of Kyle Dempster from the episode.
That was really
Caracol
good. My last shout out is Ranger Jim.
Where you at, bro?
He's a great guy.
Thank you, Jeremy. Swish, get on that microphone. Do you have any shout-outs or plugs for the people?
I don't have any specific shout-outs to Footstuff folks. I haven't run into anyone lately, but you're all great, I'm sure. I know you are. But I do want to shout out the Hannaford's Fast Express line.
Hell yes.
I know I can believe in it. It gets me through real quick. That's all I've got.
You know who I saw in the parking lot of Hannaford's the
Tom
other day?
Donovan.
Steve from Old Mountain Coffee.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Hi, Steve.
He shaved his beard.
He did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Was he buying really expensive cheese for three bowls of soup?
I think he was planning a burglary.
Ryan Knerp, thank you for coming to teach us about ham radio and how to do it, what not to do, and how to talk to other countries. That was really interesting. Do you have any shout outs for Footstuff Nation?
I sure do. A brand new organization here in Lake Placid called the High Peaks Community Band. So we are small. It just began this year, but we are looking for new members. So if you live in the area and don't mind practicing in Lake Placid, we're going to have rehearsals starting again in late April for a concert in May. And so, yeah, if you play a band instrument, either send me a message or find the High Peaks Community Band Facebook page. We need more musicians.
And Ryan, once again, if you're local and ready to blow, what's your Instagram?
Hikes with Film.
There it is. Well, that's perfect. Well, if you see some filthy pee holes out there on the trail, simply encourage them to tune into Footstuff Podcast for that glossy ham and keep it wild.